Today on Avery Adventures, we have Luke and Becca Moffitt from Wasilla, Alaska. If you follow Rockslide, you know Luke and Becca from their many adventures in Alaska. Luke and Becca, welcome to the show.
Hey. Hi there.
So you have a new addition to the family. I think we should talk about that first.
You might hear her in the background. She's kind of making a little bit of a racket. So we might have to pick her up somewhere in the middle of this, but we'll figure it out.
So her name is Molly Moffitt.
Yes.
Yep, baby Molly.
Which he let us off the hook, so we'd have to call her Ryan Avery Moffitt, that little ram that we thought it was going to be the whole time.
Yeah, if you look at the video of Becca shooting her Sitka deer, I let the cat out of the bag. I wanted it to be Ryan Avery Moffitt. It's also a great girl's name.
Ryan has been trying to get somebody to name their baby after him since, I don't even know how long, probably before I came into the picture. He wanted our daughter to be named Ryan, our son to be named Ryan, and now Molly to be named Ryan.
And I still work in angles. I'm hoping you have one more kid and it's a boy, and then, you know.
Then we'll have no excuse.
And then it still won't be Ryan.
Yeah, what's up with that? I don't feel the love. I mean, George Foreman can do it. Why couldn't I do it?
Maybe if you delivered the baby on a hunt, then maybe.
Oh, that would be a whole bag of weirdness.
Agreed.
So, all right, Molly Moffitt's here. That'll change the way you guys hunt for a long time. But Luke, I want to kind of get started in where, you know, you grew up, you're Alaskan guy, Alaskan native. You started there. You and your brother, I've heard some pretty epic tales. Just kind of start off, you know, how you got into hunting and teen years up into your later adventures with more money. That always helps to get farther out in the bush. So just take us through
it
that.
Does help.
It always helps you get into the bush.
Yeah. Well, I didn't shoot my first big game animal till I was 13. So by a lot of people's standards, I was behind the curve. But it was a caribou out and off the Denali Highway, which is a pretty popular hunt for residents here in Alaska. And shortly thereafter, we actually moved up into that area. My dad's a pastor, and we moved up there to be in the church there, which was awesome. So we moved from basically suburbia here in Alaska to the middle of nowhere. So we could hunt right out of our back door for moose, sheep, caribou, and grizzly bear. So through the teen years, my brother and I would go back behind the house. And I was 15 or 16 and he was 13. We were just going go by ourselves and go sheep hunting unsuccessfully. We'd always just walk up the mountain and look at sheep. We didn't really know what was legal or what wasn't. So it was probably for the best. And we get moose and caribou and stuff like that. So it worked out pretty well. I mean, we got a lot of experience without having to have a lot of expense, being able to do it right out of our back door, essentially take the wheelers and go out and everything. We didn't do a whole lot of backpack. I mean, we got a couple caribou. We backpacked off the mountain just because we weren't allowed to do it in that wheeler in that particular area and stuff. But I didn't really start backpack hunting until I got with Becca and started looking at non-motorized areas as ways to get away from people and kind of do a different aspect of hunting. So
Molly made her presence. She's already wants to be part of the show. I can tell.
Did I grab her?
Yeah, she's probably gonna have to have her in here for part of it.
That's no problem. So
you can just blur her out like a logo you don't want on there.
Dude, no, she's the star of the show.
We can blur her out though if you don't want her face on the camera.
Oh, we don't.
We don't want any.
You can't really see her scrunched up face anyway.
Weird.
No, look at she got her eyes open.
Uh oh, there she is. That I can tell she's already a hunter. I can already see it.
Oh yeah.
Well, she's already been on multiple trips.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's
true. Have you guys taken her on very many little backpacking trips yet?
No, she's gone for a couple walks around the neighborhood, but that was about the extent of her little hiking so far.
Well, January in Alaska is not a great time to take a newborn outside.
Yeah, what? It was 30 below here last week, so we didn't take her out. It was like 10 below we took her out, but
she went on a Sitka deer hunt. I was there. I saw it.
But she did.
And a Kodiak bear hunt and several moose and caribou trips.
Now, there's a rumor that she may have been conceived on a Kodiak bear hunt.
That's purely speculation, but yeah, we're pretty sure.
Speculation. That's funny.
But we're pretty sure that happened, but now the bear's on the wall, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, congrats, Becca. That bear looks amazing.
It's huge.
Thank you.
So, Luke, getting back into it, let's take it into where you met Becca and kind of ruined her life forever with the backpack hunting.
Right. So we got together in 06 and ended up getting married in 08. And so we started getting serious about backpack hunting about 2008. And started going in our very first backpacking place we would go. It was 12 miles one way just to get into the area you were allowed to hunt, the caribou. And then we'd shoot one. And thankfully, we'd pick a small one because we were 12 miles in and never packed an animal out. So we shot a little dinker caribou. And then it was a two-trip, 27-mile day, everything said and done to get it out. And so I think there was tears involved with the end of that one.
There almost always is. When I have a successful trip, there's usually some tears involved.
That was your first taste of backpack hunting?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, no, the previous year we went in there and we were unsuccessful.
So we hauled all our stuff back there. We just didn't kill anything.
Gotcha.
But it was so good. We obviously went back and we've been back several times since then. We got it dialed in. So
yeah, that counts. You're still packing in and packing out. You're just ramping up for it.
Exactly. And thankfully, we didn't really have things as dialed in the previous year as we did the year we got one. So it ended up working out. It was probably for the best we didn't get one that year anyway. So
you
now what's that?
You didn't do much backpack hunting before you met Becca or before 2008,
2009? My brother and I would hike up the mountains and go for sheep. We never would get one, but we'd go up there for 3 or 4 days on the mountain. And then we'd also pack a few caribou, 3 or 4 miles back off the mountain and stuff like that. But that, as far as like real backpack, being back there for, 5 days to a week or something like that, we didn't do any of that until being with Becca. So
now, Becca, I know you're busy, so if you have to take a break, that's fine. But when you first met Luke, did you know how much he hunted? Did you know what your future entailed with the actual backpack hunting and all the adventures you're going to go on?
No, I think it was kind of a classic case of I didn't know what I didn't know. I knew that Luke hunted, but I really didn't know anything about hunting, and I wasn't even particularly outdoorsy at that point in my life. I just knew that he seemed to be interested in wanting to get me out there, and it was kind of like if I was willing to go, he was willing to take me. So, our first couple of trips, I don't think I really knew what I was in for, but we kind of just, I don't know, we just kind of started doing it together, and then the more we did it, the easier it got, so.
Yeah, so she shot a moose, like, the first year after we were married, she got a moose, but that was, ATV-based, and we did a couple just backpacking, hunting trips, a couple miles off the trail and stuff like that, but it kind of worked up to it, and I didn't skimp on one of the keys to getting her out there. I was not skimping on any gear and making her just as comfortable as I was, because it was like, I'm warm and toasty and dry and she's miserable and wet. Well, what's your problem? Why don't you want to go up after this sheep or whatever? This just doesn't work out. So
that's like the best piece of advice I think that you could give anybody, because a lot of the guys, I think they're worried that maybe their wife's not going to like it or not be interested, or girlfriend. So they buy them the cheap crap just to kind of get through, and then they end up being wet and miserable. And any of the people out there that are married or have girlfriends know that that's really not going to be the way to win her over if she's cold and miserable.
Right. I think you need to give your spouse the best opportunity to like it. If she gets out there and she's cold and miserable, she's not going to like it. So
no, you're going to get, no matter what the gear you have, you're going to get wet and cold at some point anyway. But if you can start on small trips and show how fun it can be, the times that it gets wet and miserable, no matter how good your stuff is, you're like, okay, well, this part sucks. We can figure it out from here, though. And
I also think in the early years, I wasn't really up for pushing quite as hard or maybe going quite as far. And I think having that be okay was important. Like, you made it a positive experience for me kind of no matter what. And I think that really helped me to want to go again. And of course, the more I did it, the easier it was to push through those things that were hard.
Right.
So how long did you hunt, Becca, before you had success, an actual harvest of an animal?
Well, I think that's sort of like what's humorous is that I started with a moose in Alaska, and it was probably like maybe my second or third hunting trip. In retrospect, I was pretty drastically underprepared for that. But it also worked out really well and it was a really positive experience for me. And so then I wanted to go again.
Right. And I think that's an important part that people miss out on, husbands, wives, whoever hunts. is even with hunting with kids, is you want them to have success as fast as possible. So it kind of plants that seed. So that's a good thing for you to shot that moose.
Yep.
I know you can't all be like Luke and just go out and bang away at everything.
Well, like I said, I got started late. I was 13 before I even shot a caribou.
How what's the age you can start hunting in Alaska?
I don't think there's really an illegal age. It's just whatever, up to, I think it's 10.
So you get your own license at 10.
Anything, if a child's less than 10, it goes against the parents' bag limit.
Oh, I got so. You. So it's kind of like if you can stand up at the bar in Alaska, you can drink?
I think that's Canada. It's got the legal age at 18.
Oh, okay. So I'm straight now. So who has, I always want to ask this, and I remember, but who has the biggest Dell sheep in the family?
I don't think you can see Becca's in the video, but Becca definitely has the biggest one for sure, far and away. I've shot two. She's got one, but I think the total inches on my two might equal her one.
Who has the biggest goat?
Oh, I do.
Luke definitely has the biggest goat.
Who has the biggest Kodiak bear?
Well, I have the only Kodiak bear.
I was just getting to the point that Becca's for real. Becca does what she says she does, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
you're for real, so. Becca.
Well, thanks. I mean, I guess I just don't really know any better. And the one thing I will say is most of our adventures together, I mean, one of us pulls the trigger, so it's my bear or it's my sheep. But I mean, these are trips that we do together, and I feel like Luke has as much stake or interest in the animals that were mine as I do in trips where he was the one that pulled the trigger. Like, we're really in it to do it together, and whoever shoots the critters is kind of the last smallest part of that, really.
Right.
So do you ever do you guys just always plan for one of you guys to have the tag and one of you to shoot in any given trip? Or have you ever had where both of you have had the same tag on the same trip? Because that's where it always kind of gets confusing to me with, you know, who's going to shoot and, you know, all that kind of, all those logistics.
Usually, well, it kind of depends. Usually if it's a good setup and we both have the same tag, I'll let Becca go first. Mostly because then I can go by myself and go faster and further sometimes, or she can be cutting up meat and taking care of the hide while I'm trying to get the next one.
Gotcha.
I can think of only one time where it wasn't the best setup on, well, Ryan saw the unicorn goat I got a couple of years ago.
Right.
It just wasn't the best setup, and I was getting ready to move out of the country, so I ended up taking that goat. And I think that's the only time I've actually shot before you on something like that, when we both have the same tag and able to take the animal. So
to be honest, when I saw where that goat was, I never thought I'd make it up the mountain. So to me, making it up to where that goat was the successful part of that trip for me. And just being there to watch Luke shoot, it was awesome. I looking up at where that goat was from the bottom of the hill, I never thought I'd be able to get up there. So,
What is your favorite species to hunt, Becca?
I don't know. Goats kind of get into your blood, so I do like mountain goat hunting, but Kodiak deer are an awful lot of fun too. And I think part of what's fun about that, Ryan, you went with us in August, so you got to taste a little bit of it, but just having more than one tag per person, really, it just makes for a really fun time. It's not like once you punch the first tag, the trip's over. deer hunting's a blast because a lot of people have, you know, more than one critter to take, and it just really expands the adventure.
Yeah, there's a lot of shooting involved. I mean, moose hunting, like elk hunting, can be like a week with three guys, and you might shoot one guy might shoot one elk or something like that. Whereas I think we dropped five deer one day and four another day. There was a lot of trigger time involved.
Oh yeah,
it's also about the best meat there is, so that helps.
Oh, it's delicious. Just a backstory: Luke and Becca invited me and my friend Kelly up to hunt Sitka deer this last year on Kodiak Island, and I had fought them the previous years thinking, oh man, it's just a little tiny deer and it's going to be not that much fun. And the logistics, I hate the travel part. I'm just not a travel person, whether it's hunting, vacation, whatever. Tanya can back me up. I hate traveling, but I will be back to hunt Sitka deer with them again because it is the most epic hunt I've ever been on, bar none.
I think Kelly says the same thing. He really had a good time too.
And yeah. Kelly got a booner too, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, Kelly shot 100 and it scored 108 inches. So that is a big deer. But it's not only just, you guys are right, it's not just the deer hunting. It's the camaraderie. It's a place that's an awesome looking, just scenic, awesome island, and you know, you get to shoot a lot of animals and you get to pack a lot of animals out, and you just don't get to do that in the lower 48, or sounds like moose hunting or maybe caribou hunting too.
Yeah, it's definitely its own, it's an adventure getting out there. I mean, we were delayed a day even just getting there, so we had to try to back up and punt and got you on a salmon at least. So
yeah,
I almost
caught that Booner salmon.
I know, Angler Avery was at his best there.
Oh, dude, I was giving my best Orvis commercial, but without the fly rod.
So have you guys ever hunted, gone anywhere else besides Alaska?
I think I've been to Missouri twice to do the deer stand hunting deal, and I ended up getting arrowing a whitetail there. But outside of Alaska, I think that's pretty much the extent of our hunting.
There's just so much to do here.
Just like, yeah, you know, Ryan right. not wanting to leave Idaho in September and October. I understand. I don't want to leave Alaska in August and September. There's just so much to do right where you live. It's hard to want to justify. Well, that's why Kodiak was an easy sell for Ryan. I was like, you got nothing going on the first week of August in Idaho. Come on up.
Right. No, I mean, it seems like when you talk to some people, they're all about going all these other places. And I don't know if it's just because they want to experience different states and different, you know, animals, or if they just, there's nothing where they live. Like, I've never really understood, you know, cause everybody has a different purpose for, you know, wanting to go where they're wanting to go hunting. So I was just curious.
Yeah. I mean, and Alaska is so big, you know, when we hunt from the Brooks Range all the way down to the Southeast Alaska, you know, that's like hunting in Seattle and then going down and hunting in Texas or something like that, you know,
right.
Mileage wise. So it is like almost like we're hunting in different states,
yeah,
just from terrain, climate and everything. So it's just a lot of variables. And there's, I mean, for us, like, it's just an adventure, just getting wherever you're trying to go for most of the time. So.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Alaska has so many microclimates. Idaho, to a lesser extent, Northern Idaho and Southern Idaho are like two different planets, and there's like 10 different planets in Alaska.
So, right. I'd like to see Southern Idaho where it doesn't rain and everything the whole time. That'd be kind of a neat experience.
Yeah. I told you, we're going to put in for May. We're going to go elk hunting down there. You, Rebecca, get your first elk. That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. Yeah. We'll bring little Molly along. I'll even call her Ryan while she's down here.
and that is the perfect hunt in that particular unit for Molly, because it's pretty low profile, not a lot of hiking, a lot of glass.
Perfect. Sounds good.
So what would you tell a person come from the lower 48, just a general tip about hunting in Alaska? It doesn't have to be anything in particular or any kind of hunting, actual animal, just logistics, animal to hunt first, just first time person going to Alaska, what would you tell them?
I think logistics are important to highlight in Alaska, just because our road system is so limited. And I mean, as you saw on the Kodiak trip, I mean, we had to drive an hour and then take a commercial flight and then take a bush flight. And then that's how we got to where we were going to start hunting. So it's not as simple as just driving to where you want to start and then taking off. Although sometimes it is. I mean, we do hunt places that we can drive to, but I think Alaska is just bigger geographically. And so I think the logistics in starting a trip tend to be a little more involved than what I think a lot of people are used to.
Especially if you're successful. I mean, you guys know, trying to haul all the deer meat you guys have brought back. I mean, that was a job in itself, just getting all that there. So
yeah, that shit's like $40 a pound.
Yeah, exactly.
But dude, it's delicious. It is. Uh-huh. It's the best deer. I would put it right up there with elk. It's the best meat I've eaten. Pretty much, I would go neck and neck with elk, and I love elk, so that's an added bonus.
It is, absolutely. So, yeah, just have a game plan for, one, getting your gear all the way up here, and then also for getting your gear and whatever you end up taking, if you're lucky enough to take something at home as well, and be prepared to spend some money to make that happen. There's nothing cheap about getting stuff up into Alaska. That's why part of the reason why cost of living is so expensive up here, but Amazon Prime's probably the best thing to happen to Alaskans in a long time.
and just from my side, I've only been to Alaska one time. Plan on an extra few days of sitting in the airport, or hopefully you have a friend in Anchorage like you guys. You can go back to their house and go fishing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, have your expectations. I mean, if you're planning for a week-long trip, give yourself 10 days of from door to door from your house in the lower 48. I mean, just plan on that at a minimum. And, you know, we got lucky. We got out of the field early, because we were done early. But I mean, just as easily a storm could have came in, and we could have been holed up in the tent for an extra 3 days too. So
yeah, and we had food to stay a lot longer than what we did.
Oh yeah, there was a lot of food on that Sitka hunt, and me and Kelly totally screwed you guys because the guy was coming in to take us out early because Kelly had to be back here for an engagement, and Luke and Becca, they were pretty much done. We had one deer left, and they were ready to rock, and he's like, well, I'll come right back, and they had to pack up everything left, so I kind of feel bad on that aspect, but not really.
It's all right. It's not our first rodeo. It went together pretty quick.
Oh, yeah, you guys were quick. I'm sure you guys had it all back together, and you guys were already back there in about 3 hours, which is pretty amazing.
Yep.
All right, well, we'll switch topics here. If you know Luke and Becca on Rock Slide, and I'll say this to Luke, not so much Becca, so it doesn't sound as bad. Luke is a gear whore. That true?
That is true.
Yeah,
that is true.
So, Luke, take us through your – you pretty much are one of the only guys outside of Aaron that has kind of ran every backpack, and probably more. You've actually – the newer packs that came out, Aaron's pretty much with his job stuck at Kefaru now. You've ran more backpacks than probably anybody else I know. Can you give us a brief overview of what you ran and what you like?
I started out with Arc'teryx because I didn't even really know hunting packs existed outside of a Cabela's freighter frame. So right. I used those for a number of years, packing caribou and dull sheep hunting those with my brother. And back then I knew nothing about backpacks. My brother's even shorter than I am. I think he's like a Ryan Avery midget, like 5'5", 5'6", as well.
Whoa! I'm 5'8". 5'8", buddy.
Okay. But we would buy the large backpacks because volume-wise, when you look at an REI listing, the large has more cubic inches than the small. We didn't care how it fit our body. So that's pretty much how we started buying backpacks. And shortly thereafter, we started backpacking. I went to a Bardi's freighter frame, which is a very good pack. Lots of guides in Alaska use it for good reason. The waist belt for a lot of years is, granted, right now I have some sympathy weights that probably fit me fine, wouldn't go small enough on the Barney's frame for me. So I went to a Mystery Ranch for a number of years and probably hauled out, I don't know, close to 20 animals with it total. And it's a great package, and Becky used it for a number of years too.
The crew cab?
No, the crew cab's terrible. It doesn't. You need load lifters on it to make the nice frame work as designed in my mind. With the load.
What frame did you have? On Mr. Ranch, what did you say?
It's a nice frame, but the crew cab doesn't have the load lift extenders like their taller pack bags. So you need to have a bit like we use the nice 6500 is what we use.
Gotcha. For that.
And those were good packs, but at 10 pounds empty, they're pretty heavy, and especially for me, my max weight capacity is less, so you use up 10 pounds right there, and then less you can carry.
Right.
So I think I went from Mystery Ranch to a Kefaru. The first year the Timberlines came out in like 2011, I used one on Kodiak on a hunt with Steve Stidham, and I really liked it, and so I ended up getting Becca, I think that following spring, the KU5200, which was like 7 pounds lighter than the Mystery Ranch she was using. So all of a sudden, she was like hauling her gun essentially for free.
So, pretty awesome. So, still one of my favorite packs.
And so after that, I think I tried Stone Glacier on a hunt to Prince of Wales Island. And I really liked that one. And actually, their new frame that have come out, I think I might order it just to give that one a whirl because it sounds pretty interesting. And then I've used the Seek Outside, the Evolution, and also the Revolution frames, and they're really nice as well. They're super light, and I do like the fact that their pack bags are waterproof. That's pretty sweet. The pack bag layout's not, I like a few more pockets. I don't like have to have everything super pockety and stuff, but it's pretty streamlined, and it's perfect for a lot of people, you know,
right.
Don't just want concerned about weight as the bottom line and don't care about having to dig in and find their spotting scope or having stuff like that. So a lot of it's personal preference on how and why you hunt. That's why a lot of people don't like the EMR2, even though I think it's still the best pack they make. But what are you going to do?
I'm with you. EMR2 all the way.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great packs, and really you can't lose. And a lot of it comes down to personal preference and what you're looking for. So,
right. And if you were to choose one pack that you had to use for the rest of your life, which pack is it?
It would be the EMR too, although I would like the horizontal compression straps to go on the inside of the bat wings rather than the outside. But
there's a rumor that there's another one coming. I just heard things that there may be the thing in the
pipeline. I hope so. I told Aaron when I first used it in 2014 on a spring goat hunt that that's why I wanted it to be, but you know, production costs and sewing and all that would be more. So I don't know if it would price it out of people wanting it, but I do a one-time purchase for have it exactly the way I want it. So
gotcha. And Beck, on your side, are you just taking hand-me-downs or do you have a pack of choice?
Well, honestly, I'm not sure I've ever taken a hand-me-down. We do try to run our packs so we can trade them back and forth. It can be kind of handy when you're hauling loads in the field if, you know, you can quickly adjust something on the fly so that Luke can use my pack or vice versa.
So you skip running the 26-inch stays, correct, on the Kefaru stuff?
Yeah, I always have. Yeah. And we're fortunate that we can both run a small waist belt, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's just a little bit of adjusting to get the packs if you want to switch something around or something like that. So,
are you still rocking that KU pack, Becca?
I still have it, and I still like it very much for certain applications. It's actually pretty great for summer backpacking trips, and it will haul a good load. I mean, I packed, I think, probably 75 pounds when I shot my doll sheep with that pack, and it will do it, and it will do it pretty comfortably. But, man, it's sure hard to pass up the organization of a pack like the EMR2 with the external sleeves and the external compression straps. It just offers, of course, at a weight penalty, but it offers more options for hauling heavy meat loads than a pack like the KU.
The funny thing about her EMR2, the very first time we used it, we were hunting caribou out of just north of our cabin by Denali. And it was straight from Kefaru, and I think Becca like sized it for herself while I was at work or something like that. And so we take it out, and I shoot a caribou, and I think I ended up having 125 pounds of what it weighed on the scale, and Becca had 90. It was ridiculous. It was a big bodied caribou, but she was cussing Aaron Snyder the whole way off the mountain because
I couldn't get the frame adjusted properly.
Yeah, she said this is the worst pack I've ever worn. Granted, she had 90 pounds, so anything's gonna feel terrible, especially for a woman packing 90 pounds.
And Luke kept telling me he's like, it's not gonna be comfortable. It's a big load. It's not gonna be comfortable.
And I had to carry it through a scree section of like boulders on this like next to a cliff face because she wasn't comfortable carrying the load. I can't say I blame her because I ended up falling and tumbling down the rocks. And anyway. it turned out the stays were not in the waist belt. So the waist belt would just go up or stay in one spot and the pack would go down. So everything was on her, the whole 90 pounds was on her shoulder. The whole,
so. And we figured it out like 3/4 of a mile from the truck. So I basically packed that whole 90 pound load.
But she was giving Aaron Snyder every bad name in her mind and under her breath the whole way off the mountain though.
Well, sorry, Aaron's. I'm totally operator, not Aaron's fault.
So a 90 pound load on 130 pound 5 foot. What are you, 5'2", Becca?
5'3", yeah.
5'3". Let's say you're 5'3½". Let's just say that.
Sure.
So that is a hell of a load, especially when the backpack is not fitting you right. Wow.
There was tears involved in that as well.
There was. And I'm pretty sure I actually had bruised, like, I don't remember if it was my shoulders or my hip bones, but I had visible bruises the next day.
And she should never be packed. We didn't know how much it was until we got the luggage scale back.
We didn't weigh it till we got back.
That's the one thing I like hunting with the Moffitts is there's no bullshit because they pack that scale with them.
Well, we don't pack it with us. We leave it in base camp.
Well, remember? Yeah, right. But I mean, when I started doing that last year and we shot some elk and it just cuts the crap out. I had a 98 pound pack. My uncle had a 58 pound pack.
And I mean, it just makes it fun. Like on Kodiak, we're walking back through those invisible holes that you fall into through the brush. Right. And you were trying to guess how much we each think we have. And I think we were all probably within 5 or 10 pounds of what we thought we had. I don't think anyone guessed way higher than what they actually had.
No, I think some of those loads outside of some of your big hauls and Aaron's and a few other guys is once you hit 3 digits, there's very few people going very far with that truth.
No.
And it doesn't matter what pack you're using. It's not going to be a comfortable sort of thing.
Absolutely. You're right.
And it's always going to feel heavier than it is.
And I suspect, you know, an 80 pound load for me is equivalent to a triple digit load for somebody much bigger than I am.
Oh yeah.
In terms of how uncomfortable it is.
A 90 pound load on you or Tanya, that is just a shit ton of weight for a female to carry.
Oh, when we went on that bear backpacking bear hunt with Billy and Aaron and Kelly, I only had like, what did you say, like 40 or 50 pounds?
You had 52 pounds.
And I was like, this is heavy. I was bitching up the storm.
But I'll give her, that was one of her really first backpacking hunts. She did have a Kifaru fit to her.
No, that one was not.
I thought it was a Kifaru.
No, because then when we got to Aaron and Kelly, those guys, they're like, no.
That's right. It was not. But she, after that, we weighed it, 52 pounds. It was 6 miles in, 6 miles out. She did good.
Yeah. I have to say, I mean, it wasn't horrible, but that wouldn't have been like, that was just gear. I don't know what we would have done had we shot an actual bear while we were there.
We'd gave it to Billy and Aaron.
Yeah, that's true. That's what we would have done.
Yeah. most of the time we weigh stuff is like, I mean, in the past is because I'm doing pack reviews and I don't want to BS people about what I mean. I mean, there's a lot of times going into the terrain, depending on 65 feels like a ton of weight and the more than I want, depending on where I'm walking and stuff. So yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And since you've done that, like I said, I've started doing it and it makes me kind of, in my head, I get to estimate closer to where the weight actually is, which I think is a good thing.
Yep.
I think it's a valuable tool, especially you kind of know what you are physically capable of too, even without the scale, and, you know, have a good idea how you should disperse the weight, what trips you have, what weight and all that kind of stuff too. So yeah.
Absolutely. Another thing that I like about Luke and Becca is they're not the prototypical hunters with, you know, they have camo that has to match. You guys wear stuff from all genres of outdoor companies. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, the mountaineering world has been making quality gear for a long time, even before Sitka came on the scene. Has it been 12 years now or something like that? They've been around. So, so we started out using Arc'teryx and Mountain Hardware and stuff like that before even Sitka was around, just because the stuff works and, you know, it's the same materials minus the camo. And personally, we're not big camo fans anyway, just because we don't really bow hunt and we don't feel like it makes us any sneakier personally, but.
Well, and particularly in finding gear for me, I mean, until the last year or 2 years, there really wasn't a lot of high performance stuff available for women. And some women are tall enough that they can get away with wearing men's clothes, but I'm not. So we kind of, in looking for gear that was going to keep me warm and dry on trips where that was pretty much essential to safety, looking to the outdoor and mountaineering sort of sector for high performance women's clothing, that's pretty much where we found decent stuff for me. So
on that note, what are some of the non-hunting brands you guys use and recommend?
We use Arc'teryx and Mountain Hardware. Outdoor Research is really good, especially for like their hats and gloves kind of stuff is what we mainly use that for. Westcomb
Mountaineering. And there's a company out of Canada called RAB, R-A-B. And they make some pretty good Event fabric rain gear. I have a couple pairs of rain pants that they've made that are excellent.
Yeah, I'd never even heard of Westcomb until I met you guys up there, and now I have a pair of their rain pants, and yeah, good stuff.
Yep.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, of course, we've used, you know, Sitka and Kuyu and First Light, and there's some other ones in there. And some of that's been just doing gear testing for Rock Slide as well and figuring out what works. And I mean, a lot of it's the cut. If it doesn't fit you right, it could be the best material in the world and you're gonna think it's crap,
right?
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and, so. And on the hunting stuff, Becca, you're probably one of the only women that has tested both the First Light women's and the new Sitka women's line. Can you give us a little bit of feedback on that?
Well, first of all, I'm excited to see both of those companies putting out more clothing specifically for women, and it's not just something that they shrunk and put a pink logo on. Like this is both First Light and Sitka have specifically designed their stuff with the woman's physique and sort of needs in mind.
And it doesn't have any pink on it, which I like.
No, I
love pink, but it's nice that it's not.
The other thing is, man, for years there's been a lack of functional cargo pockets in women's pants. And I mean, finding decent women's pants, even in the mountaineering sector, has been really difficult. You know, they give you a pocket big enough for a credit card or maybe a cell phone, as long as it's not a big one. But having functional cargo pockets that you can actually put like a GPS and a camera and it's zippered, that's been huge. So First Light kind of came first with their women's line. I think they debuted that about 2 years ago with the merino wool stuff, which is absolutely excellent. And then the women's Kurrgat guide pants, which are also awesome. But then Sitka just this year is releasing a complete line of women's big game hunting gear. And I was fortunate enough to get to test that on actually both our Kodiak trips, a spring bear trip last spring and then again this fall. And that's everything from base layers to outer layers to insulation layers to rain gear. And I have been super impressed with what I've seen. I'm just so excited to see companies taking women's needs seriously in the hunting sector and putting out gear that's as good or better than the products that are available for men.
Yeah, on the Kodiak hunt, when the day we had to skin out our bear because she shot so late, my Westcomb jacket's about 4 years old and heavily used, so I was soaking the next day in the driving rain, and that's sick. She was dry underneath, so it was one of those instances. It was the opposite where I was a wet, miserable one, and she was the right.
Yeah.
On Becca's, when I was up there hunting deer with them, she showed me, and Becca had some of the protos because there was like marker written on the inside, size wise. It's pretty cool to see that.
Yeah, and it's neat to feel like you got to be a part of it, you know. Of course, I wouldn't have felt comfortable taking something into the field if I didn't think it was going to perform. But, you know, they had put it through some pretty rigorous testing before I even got the prototypes. And so it performed pretty much flawlessly in the field. Like, I had no complaints about it. And I would highly recommend it to people that are looking to pick something like that up.
Is there anything from the First Light or the Sitka that stands out, or one from each that you can think of?
Man, that First Light, Artemis hoodie, the hooded merino wool, shirt. I mean, I would wear one of those every day in my regular life. Like, it's just a great, great piece, and you can wear it for a week and it doesn't stink and it's durable. And it's warm when it's wet, all the things you come to expect from merino wool. So I love that Artemis hoodie. I actually really like the Kurigat guide pants as well. Now, I know that First Light's coming out with some outer layers for women, and I haven't had a chance to try those, so I can't really speak about those. As far as the Sitka gear goes, and I apologize, I don't know what the names of the individual pieces are because they were kind of in a state of flux when I was using the products. But they have a hooded, insulated, puffy jacket that's just phenomenal, that kept me warm in April in Kodiak in pretty cold, windy weather. And then both the rain jacket and rain pants actually pretty much exceeded my expectations. We were using them in torrential downpour like Luke described, and then I also wore the top over chest waders for a pretty wet pack raft ride back out to where the plane picked us up. Yeah. And I stayed dry. So yeah. Both the rain gear and the puffy jacket are probably the highlights of the Sitka gear in my mind.
Tanya, is there anything on the First Light stuff that you highlight?
Like? No, I agree with what she said. Obviously, our temperatures aren't as drastic as theirs in Alaska, but the Artemis hoodie I do wear, you know, out and about around town, and that's actually why I ordered a second one so I could, because I liked it so much when we were hunting. But no, I mean, exactly what she said. I haven't tried all the Sitka pieces, so I can't speak of those, but definitely the First Light stuff that Becca was talking about, I completely agree with.
The Artemis hoodie, wear it all the time.
And the Kurigat pants, I really, really like. Those are actually my favorite ones to wear when I'm hunting.
And we got a chance to check out, and she got one of the new, their light puffies from Sitka and the Subalpine, and they really, with Becca's help and a few other females' help, they knocked it out of the park. I think that it's going to be a legitimate line for women to wear. And the thing on the pants is, I always laugh because Tanya would have to wear pants of boys' pants and other things, and it doesn't fit them right in the hips. And you can tell that this stuff fits much better just looking at them. Not that I look at Tanya's butt, but, you know, I married her, so I get to look at it once in a while.
No, usually it's like the pair of pants that you bought, the wool ones. For the first hunting trip we went on, yeah. They were boys and they were extra large and they kept falling down. And he's like, "What's the problem?" And I'm like, "They're heavy and they're falling down." And I'm like, hitching up.
They were Rivers West and they suck ass.
Well, they were super warm. They just didn't fit. And like you said, Luke, if it can be the best material in the world, but if it doesn't fit, it's not going to do its job.
Yeah. Right. So exactly.
Well, we covered that well. I'll move into another topic that me and Luke, we don't argue about it. We just give each other shit about it, and that's optics.
Mm-hmm.
Luke and Becca, run through what you're using for optics on your general, you know, just your hunts, wherever.
You know, we're pretty brand loyal. I think we're running Vortex binos and a Zeiss spotter, Leica rangefinder, and Leopold. You know. So we stick with one brand and go with it.
Yeah, that's what I like about you guys. You always stick with that one brand. But you're a wealth of knowledge on a whole bunch of brands, and that's why you're on this podcast. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've had, you know, Zeiss and Swarovski binoculars, and you get none of their most recent stuff. And they're definitely great. But for what we do, you know, what we use, the Vortex razors have been more than adequate for us, and allows us basically the difference in price is another trip to go hunt deer on Kodiak. So that's right. A priority for us is just getting out there. Yep. You know, and we try to make a point of that when we talk to people that are just getting into hunting. You know, I try to make sure they say, you know, what do I need for optics? And then you tell them you need a, you know, $2,500 pair of binoculars. That's going to turn a lot of people off. You know, like, what? I can't go kill anything with just that. And it's like, well, no, I mean, you and I both grew up hunting with, like, you know, Nikon Monarchs for $200 just to get you started. But, you know, that gets you, you know, there's a lot of people that say buy once, cry once, but you don't need to buy, you know, an F450 just for towing something once a week, you know, yeah, or once a year.
Right. So, hey, Nikon Monarchs were my first serious piece of glass, by the way.
They're serious.
Yeah. And you're right. And everybody's level of hunting, their place in life at that time, it's totally different. And that's a great thing about hunting this day and age, is there are so many options.
Right.
Absolutely. And I think the important thing is getting out there. Like, you know, absolutely. If you're feeling like you can't go because you can't afford the latest and greatest, like you can get it done with a lot of more budget conscious options. And it's far more important to be able to go than to stay home and work overtime all the time so you can afford.
Right.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when we were on our mountain lion hunt, Jeff actually, Rozovich, was making fun of us because we were all had our gear on and he's wearing jeans and a sweatshirt and, you know, right. Like, well, I'm hunting this and I seem to get it done or something. He, you know, like, yeah. He was totally teasing us about it.
Right. I do
it's
think
definitely a matter of perspective.
Yeah, for sure. It is. And a lot of things, you know, me and you guys and Tanya, I hunted 80 days last year. So some of the stuff that I'm getting is just to make it a little bit more comfortable, where the other guy hunting a week or 5 days doesn't necessarily need that. I'd rather see that guy go hunting than to buy the top end gear.
Absolutely. Right.
Whereas, you know, a guy that's, like I said, towing his heavy trailer around all the time needs a heavy truck. Whereas I have a little gasser, you know, 3/4 ton because I only tow a little bit. It's kind of the same application. what you do the most is kind of what you curtail what gear you have, and you're not going to go out and spend a pile of money right when you're first getting into stuff. Or at least I would suggest against it, just because you might buy something that you absolutely hate and need to go back up and punt.
Right.
Or that you don't need. I mean, everybody hunts differently, so you may need to spend your money on something else. Rather than optics, you know, like gear, or, I mean, clothing.
Yeah. Right. I would personally rather go out into Alaska with really good gear and a really good backpack and boots and a $300 rifle and $200 scope. And I would probably just be as successful because I don't shoot very far anyway. So, I mean, being warm and comfortable and getting in and out with an animal is pretty much the biggest consideration for us, you know.
Right. So optics wise, you're running 12x50s Vortex razors, right?
Yep.
Becca, what are you running?
10x42s razors. Yep.
Spotting scope.
We have a Zeiss Dioscope 20-75 with the 85 objective. We've had that for about 4 or 5 years now.
I love that thing.
So it saves a lot of walking.
Yeah, that's a nice scope. What are you running on your rifles, scope wise?
Some of our rifles have Vortex and some of them have Leopold. I think all our lightweight rifles have Leopold on them just cause they're obviously the lightest weight ones out there. But, I mean, they seem to work. So
wait, you own a heavyweight rifle?
I do. It's a Lunker. It weighs like 9 pounds or something like that.
All right. That brings me up. The next topic is obviously rifles. If you follow Luke on Rockslide, you can see he is a short barrel, lightweight, no frills kind of guy. Kind of take us through your setups. I know you're a big Kimber guy, you're a big 308 guy, you're a big short Magnum. Just take me through your setup, because it's not typical, I'll promise you that, but it's very effective.
Well, I grew up using the Model 7308 and have taken moose, caribou, sheep, grizzly bear with it. And it obviously works, but, you know, I used that up until I finally was able to purchase a rifle once I got a real job of my own. So I bought a 338 Win Mag, and I thought I needed that. And it turns out several years later, I've pretty much gotten away from Magnums altogether. And I took that 338 up a mountain on a mountain goat hunt in 2009 on Kodiak. And that was the last time I hauled a heavy mountain or heavy rifle up a mountain just because I ended up shooting it at 30 yards. So it's like, this is a little bit overkill anyway. But so most of my rifles, yeah, Kimber's nice. The Barrett's coming out with a field calf rifle that looks really, really interesting.
Oh, yeah, I held that thing.
Did you guys go check it out at SHOT?
Yeah, we held it and hopefully get one to review sooner or later.
Sweet, yeah, that would be cool. They have a long mag box on them, which is pretty encouraging. Kimber's pretty limited in that aspect. You got to load everything to 2.8 or less. So, but yeah, we actually, I don't even own a 308 at the moment right now.
What?
Becca still has one. That's what she shot a grizzly or Kodiak brown bear with.
It's pretty much what I use for everything.
Yeah, and it's hard to justify owning any other guns that I have, but she still lets me buy some, so that's good.
When you guys were down here, Becca or Tanya shot and I shot Becca's little 308. It actually feels like a little Daisy Red Ryder BB gun. It's so light.
Right. Yeah, I think hers is 5¾ pounds with a scope on it. So it's pretty light.
I liked it.
And now we've had it ported, so it's a little bit louder, but it hardly kicks at all. I enjoy shooting it a lot more than before we had it ported.
So you shot your Kodiak bear, you shot that moose you guys have on the wall. What else have you shot with that 308, Becca? Some sitka deer, obviously.
Two mountain goats. Some mountain goats. Some sitka black-tailed deer, I think four or five or six. And caribou.
And
black bear. And moose. Yeah. Pretty much everything that I've hunted. I think I killed one caribou and one deer with other rifles, and that's it.
What was your farthest shot with that?
With the 308?
Yeah.
I shot my doll sheep at 280 yards.
Awesome. What grain of bullet?
165s.
That's awesome. So what you're saying is the 308's very effective.
Mm-hmm.
It is, for sure.
And it's what I'm comfortable shooting, which for me is the biggest thing. I would rather shoot something that I can shoot accurately than go with the bigger rifle that maybe I'm not as comfortable shooting. So.
Yeah, no doubt. I saw you shoot some sitka deer. You seem to have zero issue with that. Well, one was with my gun, one was with yours. Both were dead.
Right. One was substantially closer, but that, you know. but
that one, I'm actually doing the video right now on that. It'll be up on Avery Adventures pretty soon. The one that you shot with the 308 was under 100 yards, but it was hard to find. It like ran around in the bushes for 10 minutes.
Yeah, there's four of us looking for it for quite a while.
Yeah, and she hadn't shot that sucker, and it still made it 100 yards or so. That was crazy.
Yeah.
They're not terribly smart, so I think they don't know when they're dead.
No, you're the only one that I remember. I didn't see Luke shoot his with a 300 Win, but the only one that went down instantly that I saw was Becca's at 500 and something yards. I can't remember.
Well, I shot that one that you filmed, the little swizzle sticks.
Oh, yeah.
He went down with one shot. At like 60 yards.
Died of fright. I don't know if you did it.
I probably shot over its back and it just fell over anyway.
Yeah, you shocked the hell out of it. Just fell over dead. But no, you guys are very, obviously short weapons, light weapons. You're taking them on long, long walks. But from what I've seen, you're very effective with the weapon system.
We try to be. I mean, we try to practice enough to stay proficient, you know. But in the scheme of things, the pull and the trigger we view is, you want to make sure you're going to kill it, but it's such a small part of it that there's a lot of other things. You don't want to get 20 miles back and find out, oh, great, I was able to kill this thing, but my backpack won't let me carry it out, because that's just as much of a hunting failure as your having your rifle not work for you, in my mind.
Right. I think you're right on the boots and the backpack are probably two of the things that people don't always spend the money on that they should.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep. And then in Alaska, rain gear, decent rain gear.
Yeah, yeah. Alaska and, you know, a lot of like Oregon coast, northern Idaho, man, you're wet even if it doesn't rain because of the brush. So I'm with you on that.
Absolutely. And that stuff, that first light stuff you had on Kodiak, I was pretty impressed with what you had there. What was that, the Seek or whatever?
You just needed to wear it, Ryan.
What's that?
The rain gear works great as long as you wore it.
Remember the first day?
Hate rain
when I put on my secret ring gear.
A backstory. Totally faked us the fuck out on that thing because I looked over at Luke, who's a resident Alaskan. He had black pants on. It's like, oh yeah, he had a pair of black pants on when we got there. We're like, oh, he didn't put any rain pants on. So
just got done raining too.
Yeah, it just got done raining. So me and Kelly, you know, we're just dumb Idahoans. We follow his lead and he goes, we'll just go up here and go hunting and look for some deer. We walk up there. I don't get 50 yards up the trail and I'm soaking wet. And Kelly turns around and he goes, man, even my balls are wet. We're like 50 yards in. And then I get up there and I'm looking at Luke and he's like swishing. Shh, shh. I was like, Luke, do you have rain pants on? And he's like, yeah, I got rain
pants on. With the brush is wet.
I'm
hello.
Not stupid.
Watching these guys pour water out of their boots because it ran down their pant legs.
Well, then we get up there and we shoot a deer and we don't hit it great. So we have to chase it for about, I don't know, half, three quarters of a mile. So we're going through all this swampy crap. And it's, I don't know if you've ever been to Kodiak, but it's kind of like death. It's the brush grows all the same height and there's big potholes from the permafrost. So it's enter at your own risk. So we're chasing them in this brush. And I get over with Luke, and he's dry as a bone, and I'm like, you son of a bitch. But he's smarter than us. I got to give it to him.
He thought you guys were experienced hunters and new stuff.
Yeah, so did I. So did I until I got up there. It's a whole different world.
Yeah.
All right, well, absolutely. Real quick, we're getting close to an hour. Just run us through what you use for your sleep system and what you're using for shelters generally.
Depends on the trip, Ryan.
Yeah, we have a pile of shelters. I mean, you saw our gear room. It's pretty substantial.
What's a staple if you're backpacking? What are you taking?
Some sort of floorless shelter. You know, we started in 2010 using floorless shelters with a Nest and setting it up with a trekking pole before pretty much anyone else I even heard of making that kind of a setup. And that's what we use primarily. You know, you can get, you know, almost 100 square feet of enclosed space and with a little Nest that is enclosed and out of the bugs, which is paramount for us up here in Alaska,
yeah,
for about 3 pounds total with stakes and everything. And that seems to be a pretty comfortable setup for us. And I think this summer we'll probably, since we have little Molly along, we're going to be obviously a little heavier than that. We'll take the Sawtooth along and have her own little bug netting thing in there and whatnot. But floorless shelters, if we can justify, can't justify the weight of it, is what we usually go with. When on a fly-out trip where we're setting up a base camp, we prefer to have a heavy four-season tent because if the weather turns horrible and your shelter comes down, that's really the time that the pilot can't come and get you because it's too bad to fly if it's too blown down your shelter. So you really have something substantial that you can rely on when you're out in the field on a fly-out hunt. You're not walking back to the road by any means.
Right. So. I know you guys had some issues with some sleeping pads. What are you guys running now?
Well, you know, the only issues we've had is with the Big Agnes ones because we had four of them, so we keep sending them back because they have great warranty, but the warranty doesn't do you any good when you're on the ground for a week. So Therm-a-Rest works really well, and also X-Bed. We've been very impressed with both of those brands as well. So as far as sleeping, we use a double quilt now for the last couple of years, and that's
that Accomplice, the Enlightened Equipment Accomplice double quilt is probably one of the very best improvements we've made to our gear system in the last 5 years.
It's a lot lighter than even two quilts or especially two sleeping bags, no matter if Western Mountaineer is what you used to use.
Right.
So it's a really nice system for couples that don't mind sleeping next to each other, which hopefully you like sleeping next to the person you're next. Although you snore, so I don't. How do you handle that, Tanya?
Noise canceling earphones.
Oh, there you go.
The Bose noise canceling earphones have saved our marriage, I think, because I don't remember him snoring this much when we first got married. But
I got a fat neck.
Well, Becca says I'm starting to, so I might be spooling up for the same thing here. So
yeah, no, it is me.
It's that beard, dude. It's heavy.
It's starting to weigh me down.
And on a side note, if you type in Rockslide Becca Moffitt, that she did a review on the Accomplice on rockslide.com.
Yeah, actually, we need to check that out because you guys were talking about that last year, right? I remember you saying something when we were with you guys about it and how you really liked it. So we had been talking about trying it out, but I think Ryan's afraid because he says I sleep like an atomic bomb.
Yeah.
Which
she's hot. She's
but the
hot.
Nice thing about a quilt is you can vent the side. Luke sometimes sleeps with his legs hanging out.
Yeah, see, that would be me. Because Tanya, she's like sleeping next to the sun.
Yes.
So besides packing Becca's wine, what do you take for you on a backpacking trip, Luke?
As far as creature comforts or what?
I know you got Becca's. I already heard the story about packing in the wine, but.
Yeah, we did that. We packed in 22 miles on my sheep hunt in 2011, I think.
Yeah.
And I brought 3 liters of wine back there. And I was like, we're going to need to find something more weight efficient for a little celebratory nightcap or something like that. Well, so,
you know, they came out with that powdered alcohol. Have you seen that?
We have, but we haven't utilized it.
We talked about that with you guys. I think we have, but you guys haven't tried it yet?
No.
No, we just do bring alcohol or vodka we can mix with water and a, what is it, crystal light lemonades. Hey, and that makes
that's fair. That's a good, that's a good choice if you're going to have to only get one thing.
Because I mean, a half liter is a lot better than 3 liters of anything. So I mean, you're carrying it on your back. So.
Yeah. And it works a lot faster.
Yeah,
that is true. The power to weight ratio is better.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, we may have to do another one of these with you guys because I have not even scratched on the surface of like talking about when Becca first got into hunting and, you know, like what you guys had to do, like what you had to do to, how am I going to say this politically correct? Not really. You know, like the adjustments you had to make, Becca, your reservations about doing it in the beginning, because I know that I had a lot of reservations, which we both talked about when you guys came down here with girls and hunting. And it's not even the things that you'd think would matter so much, like the problems with finding clothing and just like with when you're going on trips with groups of people and you're like feeling like the third leg, which is how I felt a few times when you're with like a group of 8 guys and they're looking at you like, ugh, he brought his wife. Oh, we can't say what we want, or, you know, like breaking into the boys club. So we may have to delve into that a little bit further on another podcast. Cause I know that, we've talked about it in length. And, I think that's one of the things that I think other people that would maybe like to go are afraid to of these things. You know what I mean?
Sure. No, I'd be glad to have that conversation. I think we could probably talk for an hour about that.
I think that sounds like a good conversation between you and Becca, because me and Luke will probably just get yelled at.
Yeah. I don't want to be anywhere near that.
No. Me neither. But I think they should do a Tanya Becca bitch, not a bitch session.
It's not,
it's
a
just
bitch
laying,
session.
It is true because I've seen it. Tanya goes and people are kind of standoffish. There's a girl who, if you know Tanya, if you know Becca, they pretty much fit in pretty much anywhere. So they kind of got to get past that shit.
Well, and I think that
once they do get past it, I mean, then I don't really think anything of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
the main
right.
thing is if a girl's around, it's nice if they tell you when and where they're going to pee.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yes. I walked out. I'm used to Tanya and I walk out and Becca's peeing. I was like, Becca, you got to tell me when you're peeing. So from then on, it was Ryan, I'm peeing. And it made perfect.
It's just those little details. It's just the, like I had a big thing with needing a shower system, which was only the solar shower, but that was my big caveat on our elk hunt. And I know there's a few times that Kelly was rolling his eyes back in his head so far he could probably touch his brain. But I was like, dude, but he was a good sport. He's been married a long time, so he took it all in stride. But I know that I've been around when Ryan's been invited on hunts and he's like, oh yeah, that'd be great. Tanya would love that. And then he gets this look like, like, oh,
yeah, that sometimes can happen for sure. But you know, in a couple of years, when you want to come up with Ryan again for a deer, we can bring the solar shower out on Kodiak with us.
Hey, girls have to clean. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, you guys.
That's right. We can make that happen.
I will. But as long as you can let us bring the showers and all of our makeup along, right, Becca? Because we're all about the makeup.
Curling iron.
You guys need to do one on what you were talking about in huntresses. That would be epic.
I don't think that would end well.
Green huntress.
I think we'll pass on that.
I think that we probably should just let that out in little pieces.
Yeah, because sometimes class is a factor.
It is.
Yeah. The animals care what they look like.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think we've kind of went off on a tangent. So we're an hour and 6 minutes in. Do you guys think you could talk that long?
With your help, we can do anything, Ryan.
You know, I really thought that it would be hard to get to an hour, but, dude, we blew through it. But anyways, guys, I appreciate you coming on, and I hope you guys are on again.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
She's going to wave. I'm going to make her cry.
Let's, let's see Molly one more time. Oh, shit. She obviously got her looks from not the Moffitt side.
Oh.
That's a fact. For
the
sure.
Nation side.
Actually, she does look a lot like you in that first picture I saw of it, Luke. She looks a lot like you.
Poor girl.
She may be taller, but she looks a lot like you.
That's not going to take much. We come from a short stock.
Ask us about that. So. Both of our kids are taller than us almost.
Lane's definitely taller than Aubrey's on her way. Well, anyways, thanks for being on, and we'll do it again.
Sounds good.
Bye, guys. Take care.
Bye.